will employ the diamond. After that, may the gods Vrakus and Ubar show what they can do for us, because we will have done everything we can to avert disaster." He stood up and strode to the door. "Excuse me for a moment. Dwarf water offering for Elria?" Rodario joked. "Be kind to the goddess. She has let us off lightly more than once." Tungdil laughed and left the cabin for a pee. He had chosen to do it from the bows of the ship. Elria's goodwill or not, his own water was determined to leave him now. When he had relieved himself, he stayed at the railing, experiencing the gentle rise and fall of the vessel and enjoying the cool air. For him, water was still an uncanny element. Many of his kind would steadfastly refuse to go near a lake or even a stream, or even to step into a big puddle. They believed Elria had cursed them. The undergroundlings, on the other hand, seemed to relish travel on water. What a difference. He gazed over the light swell on the lake's surface. It looked like liquid night that had dripped down from the sky and collected on the earth.
"I'd like to congratulate you on defeating my creator," said a clear, quiet voice behind him.
Tungdil recognized it at once. Death had returned. Swiveling slowly, he saw the Alfar seated cross-legged near the chest where the extra canvas was kept. His spear lay at his feet. His armor showed black against skin that was otherwise pale. Long hair hung down over his face. His gauntleted hands were resting on his knees, and in one armored fist he held a lock of black hair.
"What will you do now?"
Tungdil knew he himself was only carrying a knife. "What is your name?"
"My begetter never gave me one. He said my enemies would find a name to suit me."
He did not take his eyes off Tungdil. He seemed alert but not aggressive or nervous, as if aware of his superior strength.
"But the names I've heard don't please me. Nobody wants to be known by a curse. And so I have chosen Aphaton, like the star."
He raised his right arm and pointed to the sky, where it glittered against the dark.
"It is the life star of the elves. My begetter said the star would grow dim whenever an elf died in Gerdlegard. In the last few orbits, I could hardly see it at all. Something's happening with the elves."
"Most of them are waging war, and are probably being wiped out."
"Because they are guilty of treason against Gerdlegard," Tungdil explained.
"Do you consider yourself an elf?"
"I look like an elf. Am I not an elf?" came the surprising question.
"What did your begetter tell you that you were?"
"He told me nothing. But he and the creating spirit mother looked like elves."
He lowered his head, and his face was hidden under the curtain of hair.
"I am glad he is dead. He demanded and committed atrocities."
His metal hand scraped over the Tionium plates sewn into his flesh. "Is that why you told us where your begetter was heading?"
"Yes. I sensed you would defeat him. I was not able to."
He raised his head once more.
"What will you do now?"
"We..." Tungdil hesitated. The Alfar did not know that he had been born as the elves' deadliest enemy. It might well be that he was playing a low trick, and that he was pursuing the same despicable ends as his father before him. But if he wanted the diamond, why was he not attacking?
"You don't trust me, although I spared your life in Toboribor. Although I told you where to find my begetter. And you are still alive, although I could so easily have killed you and tossed you overboard."
He stood up with a swift and elegant movement that combined strength and agility.
"Then I shall tell you what you want. Take me to the elves that are different from my creator father. I know there are elves that are good and peace-loving. I wish to live amongst them."
He stepped out of the shadows toward the dwarf. Tungdil saw his dark eyes.
You are not an elf, he said solemnly. You are an Alfar. They are merciless enemies of the elves, Aphaton. You cannot live with them. They would kill you outright. Why? I have not harmed them. But you belong to the race that persecuted their kind for a very long time and nearly wiped them out. They will never forgive you your lineage.
The Alfar clicked his tongue.
Let me speak to them, and we'll see.
He folded the black lock of hair into a piece of waxed cloth and slid it inside his glove. Tungdil shook his head.
Aphaton, listen to me. I advise you to hide away from dwarves and humans and elves. No one will see you without feeling fear and hatred. Leave Girdlegard and seek your own kind. But I don't want to join those you call Alfar, he hissed, baring his teeth. If they are like my Begetta, it's best I kill them all.
He raised his hand and reached for the spear that was still lying on the deck. The runes on the weapon started to glow. It leaped into his hand.
I don't want to be like them.
Tungdil still did not have the slightest idea whether the Alfar could be trusted. Everything pointed to the opposite, both what he knew from stories and what he had personal experience of. Synthoras, Cathalor, and Ondori were the Alfar he had met in combat himself. But then there had been Narmora, the half-woman who had been Fergus's companion. In spite of her ancestry, she had fought for the good and had paid a high price. She had surrendered her happiness and the lives of her children, her own life too.
What can you tell me about your Begetta and the dwarfs? He asked, to turn the conversation in a different direction.
They are dead. What is there to say?
Tungdil hesitated.
Did you see Fergus, the man who was kept captive by the dwarves?
Yes.
Aphaton raised his armored hand.
It was he who turned me into what I am. My Begetta asked him to. He made me like I am. He was there.
He struggled to find the word.
They did what he said, and they followed his orders,
was how he expressed it.
There was a lot that I heard.
He was their leader?
Yes, that's it. He discovered the island together with the dwarfs, and he came with soldiers to take it over. The humans all had to work for him. The Magister made machines that he gave to the dwarfs, and they took them away. He made the constructions he sent through the mountain. They were to locate the monsters. And it was for the monsters that he built the tunnel.
The Alfar sat next to Tungdil at the gunwale.
He was into Boribor too, looking for orcs to use with his other machines. That's when he found my creators and the orcs. My creators gave him my siblings, and he took them away and made new creatures out of them.
How did he know about the magic source?
He's a Magister Technicus, not a Magus. I don't know. I just know that he did.
However painful it was, Tungdil had to believe the Alfar. He had heard the truth first from the mouth of Bandilor, and now Aphaton was confirming it. Tungdil had wished to hear a different version. The Alfar looked out over the waves.
I've told you what I want. I've told you what I know and where I'm from. Now, tell me what you are going to do.
We're going to the Outer Lands.
To the monsters Fergus spoke of?
He interrupted. No, not to the west, to the north. And before Aphaton could ask, he said, You cannot come with us. Aphaton shrugged his shoulders helplessly. It was difficult to read his state of mind from his face. The black eyes hid all feeling, but his body language spoke of deep distress.
What shall I do here in Girdlegard, where nobody will have me?
A red teardrop ran down his cheek, leaving a pink smear.
I have nowhere to go. I only have enemies.
By now, Tungdil was convinced that Aetherton was genuine.
Come with me. I'll introduce you. No!
Aetherton's attitude was determined. He had reached a decision.
If there is no place for me in Girdlygard, then I will make a place for myself.
He smiled kindly.
Whatever you are planning, I wish you success. I am sure we will meet again.
He vaulted over the side of the ship and slipped silently down into the water, the waves closing over his head. Tungdil leaned over the side. He could not see anything. Aetherton was gone as if he had never existed.
Hey, what's up?
The watch called out, noticing the dwarf.
Man overboard?
The man came nearer.
No, a fish jumping.
Tungdil turned around and went back to the cabin. Like the first time, he decided to tell his friends nothing of the encounter. He would not have been able to explain to them where the Alfar had suddenly appeared from. He prayed to Vrakas that he and the Alfar would never have to face each other as adversaries. And yet, he was almost certain that sooner or later they would. Girdlygard, Kingdom of Urgon, Pendleburg, Early Autumn, 6241st Solar Cycle. From his fortress walls, Ortger was watching the black-clad troops of the advance guard approach.
The people here in Urgon all went into hiding when they heard that this allied army was on its way, he told Prince Malin. And I know why. No one wants friends like these.
He surveyed the head of the silent procession. These creatures were taller and broader than orcs. They were terrifying and were heavily armed.
I can see why they're afraid. It was the same in Idoslane.
Malin headed down the hallway for the ceremony. Tungdil and his friends had arrived in Pendleburg in the course of the previous orbit, together with Lot Ionan and the Diamond.
We've had 5 cycles free of Teon's monsters, and now they come marching through Girdlygard. That's what the people are saying.
Ortger accompanied him.
The common people have no faith in their professed peaceful intentions. I'm glad the Ubario will be leaving again. Otherwise, I'm afraid there'd be incidents. Too many people have suffered at orc hands.
The generals entered the castle courtyard. Undergroundlings and Ubario presented a strange picture marching side by side. By Girdlygard's standards, it was a case of sworn enemies becoming brothers. It seemed unnatural. Flager and Serka stepped out from an adjacent building to welcome them. Tungdil was with them. Ortger said nothing, but his face showed what he thought. He was disturbed to see Tungdil showing interest in these mixtures of dwarf and orc. Worse still, rumours said he had even chosen one of them as his new partner.
Come, let us go into the armory.
He strode off, followed by Malin.
You are the host. Aren't you going to greet them? I don't want them to feel welcome, Prince Malin. 100,000 mouths won't be easy to feed. The sooner they go, the better. We will hold the leave-taking ceremony, that is all.
They entered the chamber where Ironheart, Goda, Lot Ionan, Rodario, the Fourthling Queen Bylanta, Ginsgar Unforce, Estelin, and the ambassadors were gathered round a table. The other kings and queens had not thought it necessary to come to Pendleburg in person. Everything had been said, and they had all accepted the decision of the Magus. The Diamond was to leave Girdlygard. The royal ambassadors were there out of courtesy, because Malin had requested this final session. Soon Tungdil, Flager, and Serka returned to the conference room. Ortger got up.
Welcome to Pendleburg. We are here to discuss recent events and to honour the heroes.
He sketched a bow in the direction of Flager and Serka.
Accept my thanks, Flager, for your part in protecting Girdlegard. I know that you will continue to work for our benefit in your land. He turned to Tungdil and the Magus. And all honour to those who will be crossing the border and embarking on the rigours of a journey into the unknown. And now, Prince Malin, the floor is yours.
The Eidoslain prince rose. I want to show our appreciation. He addressed them with all due form. A small ceremony to honour your departure. Of course, it bears no relation to the celebrations we shall hold on your return. He smiled at Tungdil. May Vrakas guide your steps and protect you. One by one, the ambassadors conveyed their sovereign's messages of goodwill, promising praise, recognition, and lasting gratitude on their return. Outwardly non-committal, Tungdil listened and smiled, but inside he was simmering like boiling mountain blood. So the heroes were of no importance to the rulers. Having risked life and limb, they were to be greeted by substitutes offering formulaic phrases. Bylanta stood up and fixed her brown eyes on Tungdil. On the diminutive side, she had the classic stature of a fourthling woman dwarf. Compared to Circa, she seemed as small as a gnome. Her long blonde hair hung forward over her shoulder in a braid. Her light chainmail tunic was decorated extravagantly with jewels, and on her head she wore a skillfully worked crown sparkling with diamonds. I am Belinta Slimfinger of the Silverbeard Clan, queen over the Fourthlings and sovereign in the brown range of mountains. Her voice was steady, clear, and confident. I shall accompany your procession to the gates of Silverfast. It will be an honour, Tungdil Goldhand, to ride with you. I offer you my friendship, just as you gave your own to Gandogar. She sat down. Ginsgar Unforce got to his feet. No dwarf could be of more impressive appearance. Not even Glaimbar, king of the Fifthlings, came close. His fine red beard, broad shoulders, resolute attitude, and the determination in his eyes all made of him a rare figure of a dwarf.
I salute you, Tungdil Goldhand. I am Ginsgar Unforce of the Nailsmith clan of Borengar's Firstlings. As High King, I bring you the greetings of the dwarf folks, he said in a sonorous bass. May you return safe and sound from the outer lands.
Bylanta turned her head.
How is it that here we apparently have a new High King, when he has not been chosen by myself or my clans? I have not heard of an assembly being called, she said with a surprise in her tone.
I thought a High King would be High King of all the dwarf folks, and not just of some. There was an assembly and an election, replied Ginsgar, unmoved. The warriors following me to Alandor to punish the elves for their treachery appointed me their High King, and there were dwarfs from your clans, Bylanta, among them. So accordingly, it is right that I shall be High King.
This came as news to Malin and Ortka and the ambassadors. Lot Ionan threw Tungdil a knowing look. Exactly what he and Rodario had feared now seemed to have happened. A war hero had declared himself ruler. Estelin regarded Ginsgar with menace.
What have you done to Alandor, dwarf? The Aetar were your enemies, not my people. Not the green groves and the beautiful buildings. Not the ground on which you marched. We were hunting down the Aetar and we found them everywhere. They ambushed us from the protection of their temples and attacked us from the shelter of their woods and villages.
Ginsgar met and held the elf's accusatory gaze.
And so we laid waste the land to destroy any cover. And the cradles of newborn infants? You thought them potential hiding places?
Estelin exclaimed furiously.
We slew the Aetar offspring. This must have been in your interest too, elf. They would only have created new perdition.
Ginsgar laid his hand on his warhammer.
When we have done with cleaning up Alandor, the elves may return. Trees can regrow. So can your people. How many innocent victims have you murdered? We murdered none. We executed those who deserved death,
came Ginsgar's swift retort.
You should be grateful. On your return, you would never have defeated the Aitar.
Estelin leaped up, knocking his chair over with a loud crash.
Support I would have welcomed, but what you have done, Ginsgar Unforce, was senseless slaughter. You are no better than orcs.
Leaning on the table in front of him, he whispered in despair.
Do you know how many of my people are still alive?
In a bored voice, the dwarf answered,
I should think about 100. 37!
Shouted Estelin.
37! And of those, 10 are women and 9 are children.
Ginsgar's red eyebrows crunched together.
We were thorough. So now at least you present no threat to Girdlegard. It was blind vengeance, no more, no less.
The elf straightened with a jerk, tears streaming down his harmonious face, now a mask of hatred. He pointed at Ginsgar and continued in his own language until he turned and stalked out of the hall without looking right or left.
By Palandiel,
whispered Lot Ionan. Rodario grew pale as a whitewashed wall.
And we did nothing to stop them.
He put his hand on his belt where the diamond hung in a leather purse.
We let it happen.
What else could we have done?
Exclaimed Ortger.
It is a crying shame, of course, but tell me what choice we had.
Tungdil could not grasp it either. What Ginsgar had done was unforgivable. It was living proof of the cruelty of this self-appointed High King.
We are all guilty. Our joint armies should have set out from Taborobor to Alandor with all dispatch to prevent this wholesale slaughter.
He bestowed a withering glance on Ginsgar.
Do you know what you have done? You have thrown away our best opportunity of ever winning the elves' gratitude. Instead of that, you have ensured their renewed enmity. I'm really scared.
Ginsgar smiled and gave himself a little shake.
37 pointy ears are a true army to put the wind up the dwarf folks.
Bylanta spat at his feet.
You were as nothing, Ginsgar Unforce. I shall have you impeached before all the assembled clans of the 5 dwarf folks, so that you may be properly punished. I pray to Vrakas that the elves may one day become reconciled to us in some future orbit, whether or not this involves your death.
Now there's a far better candidate for the throne, Rodario murmured to Tongdil. How about a High Queen for a change? She has charisma, don't you think?
Ginsgar regarded the blob of spittle by his boot.
Spit out your poison, Bylanta. It won't kill me. I was chosen by all of the clans. That's what counts. It doesn't matter where or how.
He addressed the conference.
We're done here. I've told you my wishes and I'm off. Perhaps I should go back to Alandor and check under all the bushes. Thoroughness is one of our best qualities.
He nodded, shouldered his warhammer, and left the hall with his characteristic rolling gait. Now, Tungdil had his certainty. In this land, where dwarves such as Ginsgar ruled in hatred, he did not wish to stay. He took hold of Sirka's hand and pressed it firmly. Chapter 19
Girdlegard, Kingdom of Urgon, Pendleburg, Early Autumn, 6241st Solar Cycle. Resounding hammer blows and complaining screams of metal on anvil could be heard all over the cloud-hung stronghold. Squadrons of grey rain clouds were driving across the land and not stopping at the castle walls. The cloud contents poured onto the stones as if wanting to wash out all the mortar and bring down the defences. Tungdil, in breeches, boots and leather apron, was spending most of his time in the forge, turning the unslayable sword into a new weapon. With all his strength, he was beating out the last trace of evil. He had written off the possibility of finding Keenfire, just as he had dismissed the possibility of a future in Girdlegard. The dwarf folks he had discarded from his mind as well. There was nothing to keep him here. Twice he had averted the impending downfall and destruction of Girdlegard, and this was his third and last mission. After that, the dwarves could see how they coped without him. No matter what he did and how many lives were lost along the way, reason would not prevail. Not here, and not with any of the peoples of Girdlegard. Anger strengthened his arm and sent his hammer blows off true. He interrupted his labours to wipe the sweat from his remaining eye. He no longer wore a bandage over the left, where a simple white patch now covered the empty socket. He brandished the fruits of his toil toward the entrance. As yet he was not sure what was emerging from his handiwork. It was neither axe, nor sword, nor club. He left it up to the fire, the hammer, and the skill of his hands to form something completely new without a specific design. The metal must be an alloy he had not met before. He could hear as much from the sound it made. It sang in response to his forging. It had incredible stability, long refusing to give up its original shape to take on another. It was an age since he had been given such a challenge at the anvil. Hasty footsteps came splashing through puddles and over the wet flagstones. Circa stumbled in at the threshold. Her sight was not as good as his own in this smoky twilight. Tungdil? He tapped the vice with his hammer to indicate where he stood.
Over here, by the furnace.
We won't be able to leave yet, she said, feeling her way. This rain has turned Urgon's mountain streams to raging torrents. The king's scouts report some of the roads have been washed away. She had located him now, and when she kissed him, rainwater dripped from her nose down onto his. We won't be leaving for another 7 orbits. Tungdil nodded. Ortgar would have to feed the 100,000 for longer than he had bargained. Provisions would have to be brought in from all over the kingdom. It was an enormous task. Goregar and Idaslane were helping out with grain supplies.
I'm not ready either.
He showed her what he had done so far.
Strange, she said. I've never seen a weapon like that.
It will be worthy of a hero like myself, he said mockingly. What are Goda and Ironheart up to?
Now that they are committed to each other, they are never apart, grinned Circa. Dwarves, rain, a warm bed. You can work it out, can't you? No better excuse than the weather for staying in. The master and his apprentice will be in training, I presume.
Good. So no one will notice that I've been in the forge all this time.
Circa watched the flames.
I shan't ever really understand the fascination with forging like this.
She wiped her hand across her brow to remove the sweat now blended with raindrops.
I wonder what you'll think of the way we make our metal goods.
Tungdil put the unfinished weapon back in the fire and laid his hammer down on the anvil, before taking the dwarf woman in his arms. She was wearing only a thin leather garment, and her bodice lacing allowed him a good view of her brown skin. He stroked her shorn head tenderly and kissed her slowly as desire flamed up within him. He threw the hammer at the door to close it. The catch slipped down into place. She grinned and opened the fastenings of his leather apron. They made love for a long time on a blanket spread on the floor next to the furnace. Tungdil could never get enough of Circa. He loved to stroke her dark skin, and to feel the heat of her inner fire in the course of their love play increasing until the sweat poured off her. The undergroundling woman had once spoken of belonging to a passionate folk. This did not merely apply to fighting. Afterwards, they rested by the fire, watching the flickering tongues of flame.
"It will be hard for you to leave your kinsfolk, Tungdil."
"I have no kinsfolk," he countered. "I have been thinking a lot, and have arrived at the conclusion that my heart only belongs to one other." He kissed her throat.
"That's you. Otherwise, I'm like..."
He had nearly betrayed his secret and spoken the name of the young Alf.
"Otherwise, there's no one. Do I go to the dwarves who are fighting under Ginsgar Unforce, making old enemies into new ones? Or do I go to the humans? I wouldn't feel at home with the elves either."
"I'll give you a new home for as long as you want. It'll be up to you. You can always go away again, Tungdil. I know how you are restless. You did warn me."
Circa smiled and slipped her clothes on. Tungdil admired her sinewy body. It was tough and flexible enough for combat or for this kind of gymnastics.
"And I, in my turn, warned you. There's no forever for us. No eternally yours. Not usually, anyway.
Your eternity, Circa, would only be one or two cycles for me," he said thoughtfully.
"I'm likely to live up to 10 times longer than you."
She threaded the laces back through the leather, fastening her bodice tight and depriving him of the last glimpse of her naked flesh.
"That's weird. If we have children, you could outlive 9 generations.
When he heard the word children, he gave a start. Then he remembered that undergroundlings brought up their offspring quite differently from the traditions of his own kind. He relaxed again. If he were tempted to roam again, he would not have to worry about the care of his own children. He was rather taken by the thought of leaving descendants in the land of the undergroundlings, a line of offspring that would live longer than all their neighbors. He got to his feet and started to dress.
"Yes, it's a weird thought," he said, echoing her words.
He kissed her again on the nape of her neck.
"I can't tell you how I'm looking forward to all the new things."
"Yes, as soon as we have restored the artifact," she agreed, opening the door to let dull light into the workshop. It was still raining.
"Afterwards, it will all be very exciting," she promised enticingly. "Not just because of me."
Then she hurried out and ran through the cloudburst to her quarters.
Tungdil's mood had improved and his fury had gone.
"Oh, shit!" He had forgotten to take the metal out of the fire. If it had gone molten, he would have wasted all his efforts.
Swiftly, he pulled it out with tongs, drawing it carefully from its burial place in the red-hot coals. Sparks whizzed and flew through the air until they cooled and fell to the ground as ash. The metal was now as soft as sun-warmed wax. It shone golden yellow like honey, and there were long threads that cooled in the air and turned grey.
"So, that's what you want to look like," he said to his new weapon, dousing it in a tub of water.
The liquid bubbled and boiled and quickly reduced to half its volume while the metal cooled. Tungdil had never seen such an effect. He took the weapon out and turned it from side to side in wonder. It was black as the night and longer than the arm of a full-grown man. It was thicker on one side and had long, drawn-out, needle-thin points, so that it looked like fish bones or a comb. On the other side, it slimmed down like a blade, and its center of gravity lay high up on the haft, which gave each swipe added momentum without detracting from its ease of wielding.
"Right. So let's give you your final form, shall we?"
Tungdil pushed it into the furnace, heating it through once more. He worked to finesse the weapon until evening, giving it a rounded handle that he could clasp in both hands. It seemed to him that the metal had surrendered its resistance to him now. Night had long fallen,
and still he sat at work, sharpening the blade with a small grindstone. Bright sparks flew off in a sizzling arc, bouncing against the door. Tungdil tested the edge by taking a lump of coal and stroking the metal across it gently without applying any pressure. It sliced through the black stone as easily as if it had been air. He was satisfied for now. Tired and hungry, he stomped across the site through the rain, his new weapon at his side. He needed food and drink.
"Is it too late to bring you greetings from the towns of the Freelings?"
Tungdil stopped short and raised his weapon. A dwarf stood by the smithy in the pouring rain. His cape and hood were soaked, and he must have been waiting by the window a long while. For a messenger, this behavior was unusual.
"Show me your face."
The dwarf approached, pulling back his hood.
"I thought you would recognize my voice."
Tungdil found himself face to face with Bramdil Masterstroke.
"You again?"
Suspicion made him keep the blade raised diagonally before him.
"What is it you want?"
"I am to bring greetings from King Gordislan and the other town rulers, and to wish you well for the journey to the outer lands."
Bramdil pointed to a roof overhang.
"Can we go somewhere dry?"
Tungdil did not believe the one-time executioner.
"You've waited all this time outside the forge watching me, and you grab me out here in the rain just to say bon voyage."
Tungdil did not move. The rain did not bother him.
"You'll allow that's a trifle odd."
"Nobody must know I'm speaking to you. My mission isn't over when I've given you the good wishes."
"Have you got anything to back your story up, Bramdil?"
Carefully, Bramdil put a hand under his cape and pulled out a roll of leather. Then he handed Tungdil a signet ring.
"This authenticates what I'm about to tell you. And this is Gordislan's signet ring."
Water dripped from his yellow beard.
"Come on. Can we go inside?"
Tungdil indicated the forge door with the tip of his weapon. In its dark warmth, they refrained from lighting a lamp. Tungdil read the missive by the glow from the furnace and examined the ring minutely. Bramdil was, in truth, a trusted advisor to the King of Trovegold.
"Perhaps you were always more than an executioner?"
Bramdil nodded.
"Gemmel and others before him used to send me out on missions to observe the humans and report what they said about the dwarves. We were waiting for the right moment for the towns to start trading with them."
He installed himself on the anvil, drawing his cape off and hanging it up to dry.
"We knew the dwarves would resent it, and that we would have to think carefully about this move. Your visit helped, but the future isn't going to be easy. It seems to me that recently the free towns have chosen to align themselves with the humans." "Your impression is correct. We are very concerned about developments up in the mountains. I heard the exchange between Ginsgar and Belindis. What Ginsgar thinks of the towns is an open secret. That's the reason we'll soon be making open advances to the humans. The death of Gandagar was the last straw."
"You're here to tell me that?"
Bramdil nodded slowly.
"Yes. The town kings think you are a sensible smith child, and they're placing their hopes on you. They expect you will be the facilitator between the dwarf folks in the coming dispute about the high kingship. There is no hero greater than yourself, so they want you to be the first to learn their plans. It's pretty certain that the dwarf folks won't understand our motives."
"The Freelings are afraid of their own kinsmen? And so they are looking to the humans for allies? Is that how far it's come?"
"If Ginsgar is the new High King, yes."
Bramdil picked up his cape and reversed it to dry the other side.
"We heard Ginsgar wants to annex the free towns and get his hands on their wealth."
"And you want to increase trade with the humans so they'll come to your aid if you're in trouble.
I can see what you're driving at.
But why must no one know we're talking?"
Gordislan is afraid Ginsgar already has a plan up his sleeve and will implement it at once if he hears the towns are preparing for an attack. We'd have no time to arrange an alliance with the humans.
Tungdil fed the furnace, stirring the glowing coals and using the bellows to encourage the flames. There was a crackling response and the temperature started to rise.
Tell the monarchs that I'm honored by their trust. But I don't intend to come back to Girdlegard any time soon.
Tungdil saw the fire's glow reflected in Bramdil's pale brown eyes.
And that's a secret, too. The Free Kings must know I won't be there for them if there is a clash. They will have to sort things out for themselves.
You're going to abandon your responsibilities?
Bramdil was astonished.
I have no more responsibilities here. It is enough. I have saved Girdlegard twice, and together with my friends, I'm about to do it for a third time. Others must take over. I am for distant horizons.
The executioner returned his gaze.
How would you feel if you came back and saw war had broken out? War amongst the children of the smith? That the gates were broken and hordes of monsters had overrun Girdlegard?
He strode nearer.
And knowing you could have prevented it.
Tungdil smiled, unmoved by his words.
I would say that others had failed to think and act. I have been Girdlegard's protector for so long now, and I am not the only dwarf with a head on his shoulders. Tell the kings that they may rely on Bylanta's wisdom. They should appeal to her for support.
But your word is weightier with the clans.
I am a thirdling, Bramdil, and have never sought to conceal my lineage. Ginsgar would use that to undermine my reputation.
He went to the door and stepped across the threshold.
Give Gordislan my message. I shall not change my mind.
He nodded goodbye.
So, it was never just coincidence that we kept meeting.
Nothing in life is pure coincidence, Tungdil Goldhand.
Bramdil moved closer to the fire.
I shall take them your message. And I shall pray to Vrakus that he will change your mind.
You're welcome to try. It's not going to work.
Tungdil closed the door behind him and marched through the puddles to cross the yard. He knew this exchange was going to trouble him, but he was determined to leave Girdlegard to its fate. Deep in thought, he entered the room where his meal had been waiting for him. He still avoided beer and wine and took only water.
There he is, our scholar.
Ironheart entered, for a change not wearing his mail shirt, but only the leather under-tunic. And it had not been properly fastened. It looked as if he had put it on in a hurry. Tungdil showed him the weapon he had been forging.
So, is that the unslayable sword?
Wordlessly chewing his food, Tungdil pushed the blade over to his friend, handle first.
It's sharp. I've never seen anything like it. What are you calling it?
Tungdil shrugged his shoulders. The warrior lifted it up, weighing it in his hands. Attempted a few swipes, and looked round for something to try it out on. A footstool fell victim to the blade. The cutting edge had sliced through the finger-thick wood without a splinter.
By Vrakus!
Ironheart laid the blade on the table.
Extraordinary! Light as a dagger, cuts like the sharpest of swords, and behaves like an axe.
He contemplated his own hand and saw a drop of blood on the ball of his thumb.
And he's thirsty for my blood, he laughed. There are sharp metal bits still to be filed off.
Tungdil's brow furrowed. He knew it had been smooth as marble to hold just now. That was why rough, textured leather was used to wrap the grip. He took a deep breath. I'll have to give it another going over.
Why not Bloodthirster?
Ironheart joked.
It would be a good name.
He took some of the water and grabbed a large slice of ham.
What particular exercise are you and Goda working on at the moment?
Tungdil liked the name Ironheart had suggested.
Wrestling moves?
Boindil felt himself go red.
Very observant, scholar.
You're practicing enough to make the walls shake.
Behind them they heard the scornful voice of Radario, who was joining them at table.
I shan't be taking instructions from you, said the twin, sinking his teeth into the ham. You are a master of a different sort of wrestling.
There hasn't been any wrestling with anyone for some time, Master Hotblood.
Radario sat down at his side.
I'm staying true to my Tessia.
Of course you are,
Ironheart waved aside the protest.
If that's the truth, then this piece of meat will fly.
He picked it up and let go. It dropped straight onto the table.
Not looking good, Sir Actor.
Tungdil laughed, and Radario joined in.
I'm happy for you, Ironheart, he said. A lady at last to soften your warrior soul and to harden other parts.
Boindil grinned broadly.
It's all ended well. I would never have thought it possible.
There can't only be bad things in life, otherwise the world would cease, said Tungdil.
Enjoy what you have.
They're doing that all the time, said Radario, poking fun again. His well-meant mockery revealed the friend's joy at the young love of these two dwarfs.
We're wrestling, that's all. We want to keep fit for the adventures that await us in the Outer Lands. I shall be going with you,
Ironheart told Tungdil.
This adventure will be my greatest yet.
Radario clapped.
Before either of you asks,
I too would deem it an honor to accompany you. In those far-off lands, there are scenes and stories with which I shall delight my valued audiences.
You too?
Ironheart exclaimed.
Fracas, help us! He'll talk us to death, or make something explode at the wrong time.
Ha! Very funny.
Word gets round. Like what you did in the belly of the machine. Could all have been done differently, you know.
Yes, mock away, you destroyer of bedsteads.
But I tell you, I shall be of supreme use on the trip. He stood up, pretending to be offended.
Just so's you know,
Ortka has chosen a different route. The roads are narrower, but they're passable. We can leave in the morning, Lot Ionan says.
Chop, chop! Off to bed now, my heroes. And no more wrestling, Ironheart. Not tonight. Or at least, pull the bed away from the wall.
Radario disappeared with a grin on his face. Tungdil was pleased. The delay had been long enough to finish making the weapon.
Excellent. If it's true what the Emperor of Boasters and Big Mouths has just said, Ironheart said, I'll get some rest.
He laid his hand on Tungdil's shoulder.
Are you sure you want to leave Girdlegard forever? He asked,
his voice earnest now.
Yes, Ironheart. I don't want to see them slip into the next catastrophe.
And this time, one they've made for themselves.
You mean Ginsgar's work?
What else?
In the worst case, it'll mean dispute amongst the dwarf folks. Some will join Ginsgar the self-appointed, and the others will insist on their traditions. Call an assembly and choose a different High King. He took a drink of water and thought of what Bramdil had said.
Where will it end, Boindil? Can you tell me?
Ironheart lowered his head.
Ginsgard asked me to take command of his bodyguard, he admitted quietly. I told him I'd think about it.
That you'd think about it?
Tungdil was about to reproach his friend, but stopped.
Yes,
you are right. You must work it out for yourself. I have no right to tell you what you should do.
I'm leaving here.
Ironheart sat down again.
It's not easy, scholar. Some of Ginsgar's views are sensible, but on the other hand, he is a warmonger. He will prove a high king devoid of any mercy.
Ironheart ran a hand over his short black plait. Think on my words. The Freelings and the Thirdlings will be his new foes.
Tungdil cut off a slice of cheese.
If you take command, you'll be fighting all the time. I know it's what you love to do, but shouldn't you be happier fighting orcs and monsters, not your own kind?
He put the food in his mouth and got up.
Think about that while you're deciding. Ginsgar Unforce will be going down in the Chronicles as a notorious figure, not as a good High King.
He patted him on the shoulder.
Good night, Ironheart. Speak to Goda, and make up your mind. You've time enough before you return to Girdlygard.
He picked up his weapon and walked out past his friend. On the way, he ran his hands over the blade and tested the sharpness. But now it felt rough on his hands. He had not been careful enough, and it had cut him, not deep, but enough to draw blood.
That name is the right one for you, he said to his weapon. From now on, you shall be known as Bloodthirster. You will drink the blood of many monsters, I promise, and you shall serve me well.
He studied the red drops on the blade.
But you shall never taste dwarven blood. If you do, I shall shatter you into a thousand pieces.
A soft shimmer was visible down the length of the blade. It may have been a reflection of the lamplight, but Tungdil chose to read it as acceptance.
The pact had been made.
Girdlegard, Forthling Realm, Brown Mountains, Fortress Silverfast, Early Autumn, 6241st Solar Cycle. Bylanta held out her hand to Tungdil.
May Vrakus protect you from all the dangers of the Outer Lands and bring you safely back to us.
He will indeed, he replied courteously, as he shook the Queen's slender hand.
He was not about to let her know that he didn't intend to return. They were standing beneath the four intact towers on the stronghold walls at Silverfast. This was where the Akronta had long maintained the illusion of an enemy siege. There was no trace of their presence now. All you could see were piles of orc bones with the flesh chewed off them. The Forthlings had decided to leave them as a deterrent.
I hope that Ginsgar Unforce may soon meet his death.
He expressed his thoughts openly. If not, there will be grim times ahead for the dwarves.
Honestly spoken.
Bylanta looked at him appraisingly.
Then let us be frank, Tungdil Goldhand. The dwarf folks need someone who can stand up to Ginsgar. Not easy after his victories in Alandor. He has so many followers and much clandestine support in the dwarf realms.
Glaimbar! No, it's you who are needed, I think.
Belendilin II is not strong enough anymore. With one arm, he doesn't stand a chance. No one will listen to Malbolor, because he's from the Thirdlings, and Ginsgar has spread poison about them.
I'm a Thirdling too.
Bylanta remained as resolute as toughened gold.
You are a hero, Tungdil. Nobody doubts you. You have done great deeds, and Glaimbar makes no secret of his admiration of Ginsgar, so I can't rely on him. She smiled. That leaves Zamtis and myself. Two dwarf queens against Unreason, 100 times stronger than we are. We could use a hero at our side.
She pressed his hand and laid her other hand on his arm.
So come back quickly, Tungdil.
He bowed to her and mounted his pony to catch up with the head of the march. Tungdil wished he had been spared her softly spoken words. They had touched him more than he wanted. They went on working where Bramdels, from the evening before, had left off. Bylanta had appealed to his sense of responsibility, calling on him to accept the duties in Girdlegard that could be expected of a dwarf of his heroic stature.
Damn,
he cursed out loud, and dug his heels so fiercely into his pony's sides that the animal gave a startled leap, galloping off as if a pack of wolves were at their heels. The heavy scent of the Ubariu and their steeds had already spooked it.
"Someone's in a hurry to see new lands," Rodario commented, as Tungdil rushed up to join his friends.
He wrapped the cape Ortka had given him tighter round himself.
"My goodness! It was cold enough in Ergon's mountains, but here it feels like winter."
Flager sat up tall in the saddle and gave the trumpeter a sign. The bugle call echoed back from the mountainside, and the army set off at once. With the stamp of nailed boots, the sounds of the horses, the bumping and jangling of the baggage train.
"They may fight monsters, but," said Ironheart,
turning back to look at the long column,
"but they're enough to put the wind up anyone."
When he caught Tungdil's and Serka's disapproving looks, he quickly added,
"But I know they're all right, of course."
Goda rolled her eyes. She insisted on riding behind him and to one side, out of respect, as in her view he was still her weapons master, whatever love she bore him, and whatever they now shared. She said,
"You are hopeless." "That's right, you lot. Have a go at me. I might as well be a snout-faced orc."
He rode off grumbling.
"I do try. Fracas and Ubar are my witnesses."
Rodario laughed.
"Progress, indeed. He actually got the name of the foreigner's god right. But it took second place to Vrakus, of course. That'll never change."
"I'm off to check on my troops. See you later." Serka rode back to join the undergroundling ranks. Tungdil followed her with his eye, then looked ahead. The tension was mounting. Soon he would be seeing things no dwarf had seen before. Every twist in the mountain roads made him hope for some revelation, but it was several orbits before they had left the tortuous chasms behind. By now, he was riding out to reconnoiter with the Ubariu scouts, so keen was he to catch a first glance of Serka's land. He was so obsessed by the need to explore that he forgot everything else. He only wanted to get out of Girdlegard, away from a responsibility he now totally rejected. They travelled through the maze of rocks and sombre gorges, along giddying precipices, with dank fog swirling round them so that each step was a deadly risk. The route for their return would have to be located anew, because the mountains refused to accept any guiding marks they tried to set, whether a painted or a chiseled sign. Some of the scouts claimed the rock walls even moved. Tungdil caught himself wondering about turning back, but without real reason. It was not that he was afraid, but there was something round him and the scouts that made him nervous. Impatience was getting the better of him. It demanded that he either arrive in Letophora immediately, or else that they return to Girdlegard. If he turned round, he could clearly see the path inviting him. Turning forward again, there was only fog and vague outlines of cloud and rocks. He must pull himself together. From time to time, the scouts pointed out dark side paths from where perhaps the monsters might have emerged to march off to the pass and towards Silverfast. Probably one of these paths led to the Black Abyss. Tungdil sensed that he would have got hopelessly lost without their guidance. So it was with enormous relief that after 15 orbits, he noticed the landscape gradually changing. The mountains became hills and grew broader and greener, while bare rock was replaced by verdant slopes studded with windswept trees. A final twist in their road revealed a new world. They were standing on a plateau, maybe 2 miles high, and the view took Tungdil's breath away. A broad plain spread at their feet, and in the center lay a city of gigantic size. He had never seen so many buildings in one place. It was far bigger than any of the human cities in Girdlegard, and was threaded through with wide, straight streets bustling with activity. Concentric rings of thick walls provided defensive ramparts. The highest buildings were in the middle, round, oval, or rectangular. The tallest must have been at least 300 paces high. You could see the birds circling overhead and diving in great flocks down into the artificial canyons.
How is that possible?
Tungtil was amazed.
Who lives there, giants?